Shut up and sit down.
It's our weekly hockey podcast with Brian Metzer, the Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network, Pens and Panthers on Tuesday night on 105.9 The X. You can be listening there and be listening to Mets intermissions, post-game, Pens Live Weekly on Saturdays as well. Mets, one thing's for sure, we don't want this one going to overtime.
Overtime is just a devil's plaything, no pun intended, Tim, because when the Penguins get there, it doesn't go their way often, if at all, and it's over quick. Most of their overtimes this year, I think five different times, it's been done in like less than a minute.
That's not surprising, given especially as we talked about in the Mad Monday podcast today, that the Penguins don't do a great job winning the opening faceoff and having possession from jump street, and therein lies some of the difficulty.
Yeah, that's a big part of it is, you know, they don't possess the puck in overtime. However, there have been multiple situations, and I think yesterday may have been one of them as well, where they kind of had, well, in that particular game, you had the situation where they actually scored a goal and had it overturned due to a penalty before they gave up the winner. But it seems like there's always a chance at one end that quickly transitions back the other way and results in the winning goal against. And they would do themselves a much better and bigger favor if they did win the faceoff in OT and possess the puck and then get that first opportunity, because you never know when you're going to get rewarded. And it's just so odd to me that regardless of which way it ends, how quickly these overtimes have ended. There's not a whole lot of getting to shootouts anymore for this team. And that used to be the standard when they did get to overtime. It seemed like every single one that they had ended up in the extra shootout situation.
Yeah, and I know there's some grumbling going on about getting rid of both and going back to ties. I don't think that's the answer. I've never been a huge fan of 3-on-3. I think it's hokey. I was fine with 4-on-4, and I prefer the shootout to the tie. How about you?
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think the tie, there were too often teams, well, they still do it, though. They just kind of play for getting to the overtime because they know they're going to get a point out of it, whether they win or lose. Before, teams used to just kind of hold on for a tie sometimes rather than push for a win too, because they may have only needed, a loss would have hurt them more than anything else. So I am with you though. I do prefer the shootout still compared to just a straight tie. I don't know what other options there are to determine these games short of just going to, sudden death where you just play regular hockey and until someone scores, but we can't have regular season games going on until 4 a.m.
And they would, because of the very thing you just alluded to. The people on the bench, the coaches, the general managers who are working with the coaches every day will instruct them to instruct the players to do whatever they can to try to hold on to a point if it is a tie, or to not make the mistake that cost them 2 points if you do just play through the horn and go to sudden death.
Yeah, and there'd be too much gamesmanship involved and all this other stuff. Because say you're playing back-to-back, home at home, or you know that your opponent, because then people would start to watch this stuff, Tim. Your opponent is neck and neck with you in the division, and you know they play the next night. Well, it almost behooves you to play a game with them that goes on until 3 a.m. when they have to play the next day at 7 p.m. and you get the day off or something. So that'll never end up happening. And I can't really think of another better way for them to determine games other than what they're doing right now. But I wish smarter hockey people than us would sit down and come up with a plan for it. Maybe even just have the overtime still played as it is with a 5-minute period. Even if you just make it 4-on-4, might make it more entertaining, you know, as you just mentioned, because I still think you have a lot of open ice, but it seems like there's still some strategy. Sometimes in the overtimes, which are exciting, it's just back and forth action. And maybe you would still, with 4-on-4, get games kind of determined in that period rather than getting them to the shootout, because it seems like the shootout is the thing that people have the most issue with.
And I don't know why. I mean, it's entertaining. I don't like ties. I think it's not what most American sports fans and fans of other sports in North America are used to. Maybe that's part of it, Mets. We're all pretending to be soccer fans these days, so we have a greater appreciation for the tie. Like, honestly, I don't know if that's part of it, maybe, that we're getting more used to it because it's more of a European thing. Maybe that's it. I don't know. But the idea of a tie coming back to me is displeasing.
Yeah, I don't like ties. I like winners. I want to see an outcome in a game. I don't want, because then I feel like it was just all for naught. It's kind of like, hey, nothing happened. I know there'd be statistics accumulated, but ultimately at the end of the day, I want to see a winner and I want to see a loser. And your point about soccer is funny because it made me think of a meme I saw just after the World Cup ended over the holidays. And it said, can I stop pretending I like soccer at this point because it's over now? Because that's where I fall on it. I just can't get into it. I know Mark Madden and some of our other media brethren would get mad at me for saying that because they love it. It just doesn't really, it's not my cup of tea for whatever reason. And so I want a winner, I want a loser. And maybe the thing to do to make the shootout more intriguing, Tim, is to do it international style, where the same player could go again and again and again, do the TJ Oshie thing. And that would then have teams having strategies of having guys that are specialists for that. Maybe Erik Christensen could come out of retirement and start playing again in the National Hockey League and just be a shootout guy. Because I think that might make it, you know, a little bit more of a strategy involved if you just had the same guy going six times against the other team's six different players or something like that.
Well, maybe the Penguins need a faceoff specialist too, for that matter.
Well, an overtime faceoff specialist anyway. You know, the Penguins, as I've been monitoring the faceoff stats over the past handful of games, inevitably, it seems like they're up almost 60 to 40% through one period of play. And then it just deteriorates the rest of the game. And then it evens out a little bit, or maybe they slip behind. And then they get to the overtime, and then they don't win an all-important first faceoff there. So I think, you know, maybe it's who was one of the last faceoff specialists I remember them bringing in? And your cohort at the Trib, Seth Warbaugh, will smile somewhere when I say this. Mike Zygomanis,
yes.
Can you hear us? We're putting your signal into the air. Come in and win some faceoffs for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
The Ziggy signal, exactly. yeah, McLeod had 13 faceoffs and 13 wins for the Devils during the Sunday game. That was something else. And I look at the stats of the Penguins right now. Carter's at 59%. He's their best faceoff guy percentage-wise. Sid has the most wins at like 539 or something like that, and he's at 52%. So it's not an overwhelming problem. It just seems to be manifesting at the wrong times.
Yeah, you're right. And the thing is, you could have a game in which you are finishing on the right side of the faceoff battle, but if you're losing an all-important defensive zone draw, or you're losing one in overtime when it's, you know, right there, like we just talked about, then that's going to be a problem. So I think it kind of magnifies the issue that the team has anyway. And I know it's kind of righting itself a little bit as guys get healthy, because Ryan Poehling was back and he's not proven to be a terrible faceoff man if you ask him to take any draws. But generally speaking, your bottom six guys have been an issue. So a faceoff specialist might slot into that role during, you know, the first 60 minutes of a hockey game. Not that he's going to be the first guy off the bench in overtime, but I think that that is something that maybe you identify when you are looking for a player to bring in to bolster your forward ranks at some point. The ability to take faceoffs effectively should be there. You know, that should be at the forefront. And it's off and on over the last handful of years, it's been a problem. But I think the good news for this team is most of the guys that are taking faceoffs for them win more than they lose, at least in terms of the percentages. You just pointed to a couple of them there. But Teddy Bluger's over 50% for the season. He's at 50.8. You have Gino even at 51.4, which is so impressive. I know he's dipped a little bit recently, but he's had a hell of a year with the faceoffs, specifically on the power play, because that's something that we saw him doing a lot more of this season than he ever did before. Gino's power play winning percentage, Tim, 60.5.
That's something else. That's impressive for him, you know, especially because it looked like for a while they didn't want him taking faceoffs at all.
Yeah, and he used to be a big-time liability there, so I don't know if he started to work on it the way, you know, Sid did early in his career, but for whatever reason, he started to win way more than he has in the past, and to be over 50% at over the halfway mark of the season for just your regular overall faceoff percentage, that's pretty impressive stuff. So I do think it's a concern, at least in those big moments. So I guess it would be situational faceoffs seem to be the thing that's biting the Penguins in the backside more so than the overall duty itself.
Brian Metzer with us, Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. How about the Panthers? They're closing in. In fact, they're the next team along with the Islanders at the time that we're taping up anyway, Mets, right behind the Pens.
And that's one that I think I've had my eye on. I know a lot of analysts around the league have kind of just said, well, the Islanders are the team to watch for. The Buffalo Sabres are the team to watch for when you're looking at wild card teams anyway. But for me, Florida is the one with the pedigree. The other two teams, yes. I mean, well, and the Islanders, of course, have pedigree, so they're always going to be in the hunt. But for me, Florida, they haven't looked like the same team since they made the trade to bring in Tkachuk. They gave up a lot to get him, and it's not saying he's not been a good player for them, but it almost disrupted the apple cart a little bit there. They gave up what essentially is a number one type defenseman in Uyghur. They haven't really offset him effectively enough, specifically whenever Ekblad's out of the lineup a lot. So that's kind of bit them in the backside. Hubert Ow was an awesome setup man for them. He put up a outstanding number offensively last year. He's a former rookie of the year, and you give him up for a power forward. Now I know Tkachuk can create a lot of offense on his own, but he would be more effective if there was a guy to feed him the puck, which, you know, doesn't always happen as much. I know Barkov is an outstanding center, but for me, they are not near as deep as they were a season ago, and they've had goaltending issues this season. Now, all of that said, they've gone 7-2-1 in their last 10. They're 12-6-3 on home ice, which it's very tough to beat them down there, and they've won two in a row. So when you are going head-to-head against them, knowing that the wild card is at play, I mean, the Penguins have two games in hand on them, Tim, but it's a team that I think I will keep a really solid eye on in the rearview mirror because of what they are capable of doing and have proven over the last couple of years that they're capable of doing. It wouldn't shock me if they climb right up and get themselves into the hunt for the playoffs. They're kind of not out of it in their division, but they're eight points out of the third spot, just a handful behind the Penguins. And that's the team, even more so than the Islanders or Sabres, that I think I would really watch hearty eye, as I said, because I think they could at some point get hot and start winning like they did last year, even though they're not quite the same team.
What do you make of the situation in Vancouver? You know, Jim Rutherford's a part of that. Now Rick Tocchet's a part of that, replacing Bruce Boudreau.
I love it for Tocchet. I mean, we all know Rick, and he desperately wanted to get back into coaching. I know I had a chance to talk to him at the Mary Lemieux fantasy camp last year, Tim, and he didn't say it, but I flat out asked him. I said, "How are you not coaching the Flyers right now, Toc?" And he said, "I don't want to coach there right now, based on what was going on."
You want to coach in Vancouver, though?
No, that's what I thought. I'm like, what makes it attractive to go there? And the only thing I can think of is, he had a good working relationship with a lot of people in that organization. I mean, he knows Jim Rutherford. He knows Patrick Alvin. He understands he's going to have probably a little bit more latitude there than he would in a lot of other situations. And he has a lot of talent to work with, too. And sometimes a group like that, maybe they need that voice a little bit. Someone who's a little bit more stern, maybe a little bit tougher than Bruce Boudreau. Not that he isn't a good coach, but we just saw the whole media soap opera that's been going on. This guy's like a teddy bear. That's not Rick Tocchet. He's not going to be a teddy bear, but he's also proven he can get results from players such as Phil Kessel. A lot of people couldn't get through to Phil. Well, Tocchet got the best results on earth out of this guy and broke through and, you know, really got him playing some effective hockey. So I think it's an interesting fit. They have Sergei Gonchar going there as well. So it's kind of these situations where the Penguins kind of have a pipeline funneling into another organization now in terms of coaches, because they were the first to give Sarge an opportunity. And obviously Tocchet had some great success here after some other failures or tough situations with other teams. But I think it could work. The biggest thing for me is, will it work out simply based on the fact that so many people were in love with Bruce Boudreau? The fans obviously were. I've already seen the catcalls come and talk its way, Tim, where there are people going nuts, calling him a gambling addict and a guy, you know, all these issues, mob ties. I mean, come on, you're bringing up stuff from 20 years ago that came up or close to that long ago, and there's never been anything like that again, except for success, usually with Rick Tocchet. So it's a little shocking to see them being that disappointed by a guy who's had a lot of success coming in to be their next coach. And I will tell you this, Tim, Borky on our tweet segment yesterday, he's buddies with Bruce Boudreau. And he said, "I just want to throw this out. People have made this a soap opera. Bruce knows what he was getting himself into. He's compensated handsomely to be a coach in the National Hockey League. And if you don't want to get fired, win more games."
I just wonder, from Tocchet's point of view, does he want to jump into this and then see what happens at the trade deadline? Is this an indication there's not going to be as many Vancouver Canucks up for sale as we thought?
I would think that Tockett would have brought that up in any interview and said, "Hey, Jim, I know you're a gunslinger and I know you like to wheel and deal, but we're not, tell me you're not blowing this up because I don't want to come into a rebuild." I mean, you know, like I do, Tim, it's such a talented hockey team. I mean, they have, it seems like more than anything, they have offensive talent. So I think Brock Besser could still potentially be traded. I think that would happen. JT Miller signed his contract, and I think he could be the Kessel in this situation because he's proven that Boudreaux wasn't working for him for one reason or another. So maybe Tockett is now a JT Miller whisperer. Plus, he knows some of these guys just from their ties to Pittsburgh. He was around here even before he coached. He was kind of in the area a little bit. He was doing Trib Live Radio and some other stuff before he got back into coaching. So he's familiar with those kids in Pittsburgh. I think he may have some history and make that work. Pettersson might be a player he could get to. They can get a little bit more out of him. The issue there, though, is the blue line. Their defense is a bit in the shambles, even with Quinn Hughes. So that's where I think Jim Rutherford might use Brock Besser and maybe another one of those young forwards, because let's not forget they have Nils Höglander, who's not really made it happen just yet. There's another youngster there that I always forget when I'm talking about their young forwards that they may wheel and deal with to get Tockett some more weapons to maybe become a little bit more of a blue-collar attitude behind that top-end offensive talent, which would make them harder to play with, while at the same time maybe getting them a better defensive defenseman to play behind Quinn Hughes. And then suddenly you have a decent hockey team with Thatcher Demko there.
Mets, appreciate it. Thanks a lot. We'll be listening to you for the intermissions for the post game. We'll be listening to you on Saturdays for Pendles Live Weekly. Thanks as always for coming on, and we look forward to it next week.
Yeah, thanks for this as always, Tim. I always enjoy our chats, and look forward to catching up again next week.
Brian Metzer, Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network.